Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Danielle Park, editor of the popular blog Juggling Dynamite and president of Venable Park Investment Council Incorporated. Her website's JugglingDynamite.com and VenablePark.com. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jim.
Danielle, are interest rates too high, too low, or just right in the Goldilocks zone?
It depends who you are, I think. I think from a saver's perspective, interest rates are the best we've seen since 2007. And when you look at the, you know, short-term interest rates minus CPI, because CPI has been falling now for a number of months, we're actually at the highest real yields we've seen since 2007. So that's actually great for savers. And, you know, it's a long time of coming because we were in negative to zero or negative rates for many years there as they were bailing out debtors after the 2008 financial crisis. And that continued again during the pandemic, of course, when it was, you know, everything they could to get consumption driven, you know, at the expense of savings and all that sort of thing. So from a saver's perspective, it's a brave new world where thank goodness we're getting compensation for our capital again. From a debtor perspective, it's a problem because the fact that the cost of carry has gone up 20-fold since they started hiking interest rates, and that is, you know, takes, as we've discussed before, up to a couple of years to filter through, and it's really starting to hit now as the bank regulator for Canada was noting this week, OFSI, that 76% of Canadian mortgages are up for renewal between now and 2026. The average interest rate increase in just mortgages that have renewed in the last year are up. The payments have increased about 25%. And OFSI sees the payments for the ones that are coming due in the next couple of years going up by 30%. So obviously that is a problem for people that came into this rate hiking cycle with record debt levels, which is the median household in Canada, has never owed so much. So as far as the real economy goes, we're seeing lots of stress. Small businesses, the sentiment is very bad. The bankruptcy rate is very high, increase of 87% year over year in Canada, 35% year over year in the United States. We're seeing a lot of businesses just closing, never mind filing for bankruptcy, just closing the doors, restaurants and all kinds of small businesses, which is a problem because they do create a lot of the jobs in the local economies. So that is feeding through into an unemployment rate that has been rising in Canada already for the last year. So it's bad in the sense of people who owe money are finding the stress increasing, and that's only going to continue over the next year or two as a bunch of this debt gets rolled over. Commercial debt, there's a whole bunch of it coming due that needs to be rolled over. And again, much of this was borrowed when rates were abnormally low during the pandemic. And businesses tend to have no more than a five-year term, even the most fortunate businesses. You know, the fact that money was borrowed during 2021, that's what's coming due now. So as far as the real economy goes and as far as debtors go, interest rates are quite tight. As far as financial markets go, I think we're looking at a different scenario there. So, you know, we've had enormous fiscal stimulus out of the United States in the form of the CHIPS Act, the Inflation Reduction Act, the Infrastructure Act. These are Biden's initiatives that happened in the last year or two just to try and stimulate demand. I applaud to a large degree some of the programs that have come out to stimulate, especially the electrification of the grid and charging for EV vehicles and the whole transition of the economy to this new future. All good. The reality is, though, that that has been very stimulative of demand, and we've seen a lot of building out to a large degree, the infrastructure, the warehouses, much of the back support of that transition have now been built out much faster than the actual front-end demand is moving. So I think we've kind of paid forward, if you will, for the future. And in the short run, we've got inflationary impulses from that. Fiscal stimulus has definitely impacted the U.S. economy and held it up much better than expected in the last 12 months. At the same time, of course, central banks, and especially the Fed, pivoted last November and started talking about the expectation of that they'd reached the pinnacle. You know, it's been 10 months since they did the last rate hike. It's been 26 months since they started this hiking cycle. And traditionally, as I said, about 2 years in, you're starting to see that really bite in the real economy. So again, anyone that's not borrowing money from financial markets, anyone that's going to banks or, you know, dealing with credit card debts that are over, you know, generating interest above 20% and all that sort of thing, they're all very aware that financial conditions are tight. We're seeing that in the housing market, right, with sales disappointing. Mortgage applications have been falling. The data this week in the United States, very weak. Refi activity, very weak. But again, most of those mortgages in the United States are currently sitting at less than 4% because, again, they were taken out at fixed terms when rates were very low. In Canada, the current average mortgage rate is under 3%. So to say that we've seen all of the impacts we're going to see from this tightening cycle already is pretty naive, considering current rates are, you know, around 7% in the U.S. and around 6% in Canada. So there's a lot more tightening to come for the household sector and small business, anyone accessing credit through the banks. At the same time, financial conditions have loosened remarkably for publicly traded companies. And this is a function of the fact that they, you know, took what the Fed said last fall of, I think we've tightened enough, you know, we should be able to cut again in 2024 was their thought last fall. But just that sort of step, that pivot, if you will, in statement or intention of policy was something that the financial markets took and ran with, to the extent that they've now bid up the price of, for example, the junkiest debt. Even as default rates are leaping, the junkiest debt is now trading with a spread over equal term treasuries of less than 300 basis points. Historically, it's almost twice that's normal. So you're supposed to be compensated in terms of more yield, higher interest rate if you're lending to a pretty weak, sketchy company. And more than 40% of the Russell 2000 small cap companies are losing money now and can only function if they're able to get new debts. So if you're loaning to these companies, you would think surely you're looking at a negative earnings company asking for loans from the public markets. You'd think they'd have to pay a significantly higher interest rate. Lord knows small businesses are. Small businesses are paying rates in around 10%, but you've got the junkiest publicly traded companies, because the financial markets took that whole idea of the Fed easing and run with it, bidding up the price of assets in anticipation of this cutting cycle, they have, you know, again, overpaid for the junk debt such that it's not yielding enough to compensate you for the risk you're taking in buying that. But we've got a whole bunch of pooled funds, ETFs, mutual funds, you know, products in the financial sector that have been created to passively buy these instruments. So they are buying as capital flow comes in, and that is itself a self-fulfilling prophecy, driving up prices and therefore loosening financial conditions for public companies. The same things happened in the equity market where, you know, the S&P 500 has leapt, the NASDAQ, basically most stock-based instruments have leapt significantly since last fall, again, in anticipation. But here's the rub, Jim. Now the central banks are sitting there going, oh, no, you know, like we thought we were going to be able to loosen rates for the private sector, for the actual economy, for households and small businesses. But now we've got a problem because financial conditions have more than loosened more in the last, since the fall. So it's like as if, in other words, it's as if the financial markets are saying that the 20-fold increase in the base rates has never even happened, which is absolutely ludicrous for all the reasons I've described in terms of what's really happening in the economy. But in terms of the financial world, you know, it's been enabled and bailed out and backstopped so many times that we have this gambling preoccupation, and we've got a world of passive products that just buy with every dollar that's given. There's no thinking, there's no analysis, there's no, you know, valuation concerns going on. It's just what you call passive flows going in. And a lot of that is coming from paychecks, where now in the United States, these flows, you know, from if you're a worker, it is now the default that you are contributing to these plans. It used to be that the default was you weren't and you had to sign up for them. That's now shifted in the last while to it is the default that fund flows, a portion of your income goes into these things. So it's driving all this passive flow, which might sound great in the sense of it's pushing up prices, but the reality is that we're obscenely valued here. And under the hood, there's just this handful of stocks that have been making new highs, you know, the NVIDIAs and Apples and Microsofts and Amazons of the world have driven. And we now have, you know, the top six companies have more than 30% weight of the S&P 500. Well, we haven't seen this kind of overvaluation and extremity and concentration since the tech top in 2000. So the tech top in 2000, for anyone that doesn't remember, was again this period of euphoria around technology and the internet and computing and all this stuff, which was all good in terms of an actual organic, you know, world-changing underlying technology. But the fact is that the prices of things got bid up to such extreme levels that they were predicting just ludicrous earnings. And this is, I think, what's happened with the AI momentum of late, where, yes, there's this AI theme, and there's this green theme, there's this EV theme, there's this, you know, electrification theme. Those are all legitimate, and I think where the future's going. The question is, at what level, you know, of earnings is that reasonable? So right now, the S&P 500, because of this handful of stocks that are at these nosebleed valuations, is trading like 21 times forward earnings. And that's expecting rich earnings looking forward. So we're really just off the charts crazy here. Even last fall, you know, because stocks had sold off for a period of time again into the fall, in reality, you know, they were reflecting the tightening of financial conditions in the banking sector for the real economy. And they were saying, oh, this is going to hit profits, so we better, you know, so people were selling down the stock market into last fall. But at that point, even the lowest it got was 18 times sales, which is, a, you know, like the long-term average is more like around 15. So times earnings. In terms of times sales, times book value, all that, we're just at the highest valuations we've seen since the tech top. And again, for anyone that forgets, with all the mania going on and all the can't lose, the tech sector dropped 80% and took 15 years to recover. And the broad markets, the S&P, the TSX, you know, much less just tech-centric, but they still fell by half and took many years to recover. So this is this problem with overpricing things. So when you say, you know, how are financial conditions today, the answer is that investor sentiment is uber optimistic again. Asset allocators are acting like the tightening in the banking sector never happened, and that unemployment isn't rising, and that, you know, companies aren't disappointing on their earnings reports. The Canadian banks, right, setting aside big loan loss provisions in reflection of that real economy, in reflection of the households and businesses that are faltering, and yet financial markets off to the races. So the more that financial markets continue to rally like this, the less likely it is that central banks will cut interest rates. And therein lies the rub, right? So we've got this this problem in the real economy where people are begging for relief, but you've got financial markets that are pretending like, you know, not all is well. And that's sort of holding the hands of central banks to some extent to actually step in and help the real economy.
We'll have more with Danielle Park right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Danielle Park. Danielle, is the Canadian economy actually in recession right now and we just don't know it?
Well, the way this works is we won't actually know in for sure until it is, you know, dated after the fact and retrospectively. So it is, we have had some indicia of that, you know, on a GDP per capita basis. We're into our seventh consecutive quarter of decline. So that's a very scary number and suggests that we are probably going to see contracting GDP. But the thing is that, you know, I remember all this again in past cycles, and it was very typical. For example, the last U.S. recession started in December of 2007. By the summer of 2008, we were still seeing jubilance in the stock market, particularly the Canadian stock market. And it turned out that the recession had already begun, but we didn't get confirmation of that till the fall. And indeed, after that, it was another 10 years of backward-looking revisions that made the Great Recession GDP reflected a deeper contraction in GDP. And that was adjusted over the 10 years that followed. Of course, by then, you're long out of the recession. So it's not very helpful to use that official GDP data. But by what we can see, we're definitely much weaker than the U.S. We have not had those, as I say, fiscal stimulus packages. And we don't have the handful of tech companies igniting the imagination and bidding up the costs and loosening financial conditions to the same extent that they've had in America. Indeed, you know, in Canada, we've got things like the Canadian banks. Like I said, there's a bifurcation going on there right now where Royal and CIBC are up about 4% on trading today on news that they had smaller than feared provisions set aside for credit losses, but the other banks that have reported, you know, had to increase those credit loss provisions, which hits their income statement. But as a basket, so things like Bank of Montreal was, got the market response was to sell off the share 9% on the day they missed earnings because of credit loss provisions. So we're in a market where if you disappoint at all, or even if you just hit the number but don't exceed it, the market is very unforgiving. And we're seeing this across, the whole under the hood of all the broad indices, major drawdowns happening in the basket of companies except for this handful of standouts. And again, in Canada, as I say, the financial sector, even with Royal and CIBC beating, is still off about 8% from where it peaked in February of 2022. And things like the real estate REITs, XREs, off about 30% from where it peaked in 2022. The preferred share index is still off 21%. Dividend-paying shares in general, although they've rallied, are still off about 15% from where they peaked in 2022. So my general take on this is that apart from the, like I said, the sugar high going on in a handful of things, which is driving up the large basket in the U.S., the rest of the world has not participated to any large degree in this rally. And even to the extent that they have since last fall, many indices are still just where they were in 21 or 2022 at the peak, or even further lower than that. You know, so the commodities basket, again, there's been this big euphoria in the commodity space. You've seen a huge run in the copper price, again, to all-time highs on this whole jubilance around the reality that copper is used as a big conductive space in electrification. Silver has gone up on a similar aluminum, this thing. But the thing is, the basket of commodities, the CRB index, is still just back to where it was two years ago in May of 2022. So I think the trend or the theme continues that the Canadian economy is very likely in recession or will be imminently. More importantly, why that matters is that unemployment will continue to rise here. We're seeing even in the U.S. data, the Indeed job postings, you know, the number of jobs that it keep posting are falling. And I've seen this in Canadian discussions in the real world on Reddit boards and all sorts of things where people are saying they've been looking for jobs for months and haven't been able to find employment. So under the hood, the Canadian economy is sputtering badly, doing poorly. You know, that over-concentration we did on housing has not served us well because people overpaid in the euphoria of the peak in 21, 22, and now they're just left with the debt, and they're looking at how do they lower their costs, and there's all these pre-orders that went in for condos where people put down money, and now they can't afford to close, or if they do, they're huge negative cash flow. So I think that the Canadian economy's got a lot of tough slogging to go here, that the Canadian banks are going to continue to have, you know, write-offs and losses in terms of credit defaults, which are on the rise. And so all of that makes me very concerned and cautious in terms of taking on any equity risk in this environment. I don't think this is a great time to do that. I'm also worried about the fact that portfolios are as highly allocated to equities as we've seen in the last 30 years. And people have almost no cash liquidity, Jim. When you look under the hood, funds are fully invested, managers are fully invested, you know, the fund manglement community, or the money manglers, as I like to call them, are fully in on this, all afraid to sell, not afraid to lose money, afraid to sell, terrified that things might, you know, go up a little further and they'll get, you know, they won't participate in that. So that kind of really risk-blind approach won't serve well. It hasn't at the peak of other cycles, and it certainly won't serve well a population of owners which are 24 years older today than they were at the tech top in 2000. So, you know, this is the boomers and the 61 to 78-year-old age bracket who are the bulk of the owners of these financial assets, which have become so unhinged from any kind of investment valuation reality, and they're just overpaying to, you know, as if cash is worth nothing, as if there's no alternative. Just like they said back in 2021 when interest rates were virtually zero, everyone was throwing money at anything and everything, crypto, you know, SPACs, all this craziness, because they all said, well, there's no alternative, right, Tina? Well, today there's lots of alternative for money to actually earn between 4% and 5% and safe deposits, very little risk, compound your interest, all good, but people are not there to a large extent. There's hardly anybody in bonds, very low allocation. Again, this is part and parcel of an investment industry that makes the highest fees off the equity side and has been in rally mode for the past several months. But I think that we're still at risk of disappointment there. The bond market has sold off as well in terms of the treasury market sold off, took the Fed on its word last fall, said, oh, they're intending to, you know, as financial conditions have got looser and they've seen all the speculation, the bond market is sort of thinking, okay, they're not going to ease rates, apparently. It looks like they're going to have to stay tight. And at the same time, you know, as I said, that's a negative for the overall economy. So that makes me think they may stay tight longer, but when they do start cutting, they're going to likely have to respond much faster than it's currently priced in. And basically, if you're going to start cutting even a percent off the overnight interest rate, you're going to see a rally in the highest credit quality bonds, you know, between 5 and 20%, depending on the duration, just in 1 year where they cut a percent on the overnight rate. So I think there is opportunity there for capital gains, as well as I say there's this best real yields available in more than 20 years. So all that is attractive, but most people aren't there, sadly. They're in the stuff that's so extremely overdone.
Danielle, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Hey, thank you, Jim.
My guest has been Danielle Park, editor of the popular blog Juggling Dynamite and president of Venable Park Investment Council Incorporated. If you have any questions for Danielle or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HouseStreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at House Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com Radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com Radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.